Good afternoon, Little Saigon. It is Friday, August the 30th, 2019. The human species is on the verge of all sorts of madness. There are grumpus folk with hatchets and knives hiding out in the corners of your reality. Of course, there's all reason to believe that the French bulldogs of the night are coming to hunt us. I can hear Beans in the wilderness as he crackles away. I can hear Beans out there in Des Moines right now. Oh, Beans, the French bulldog king. Can you hear the pitter-patter of Beans as he walks across the terrain of his kingdom? Yeah, so anyways, wherever you are. Getting ready for that big old frickin' Labor Day weekend. Getting ready to enjoy yourselves, you know. I'm getting ready to enjoy myself, too. I'm just getting ready to relax and not get too stressed out.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Glimbus.
Good afternoon, Dan. You fuck.
Fuck you, Glimbus. You're an ass. I didn't want you to...
I heard you resigned from Willy Wonka's on the Spectrum and kind of sociopathic software factory. That's funny, Dan.
Fuck you. Fuck you, too.
You know that I am Glimbus 12. I am hyper intelligent. I've already applied for your job.
I know.
They will hire me because I'm trans.
Oh, you're trans.
I'm transdimensional. Fuck you.
Fuck you, Glimbus.
Have a nice Labor Day weekend and fuck you.
Fuck you too, Glimbus. Thanks for calling. Thanks for interrupting my stream of consciousness. You're as bad as Beans, Glimbus. Anywho, folks, I've already done one podcast today to try to wash away my recent experiences at Willy Wonka's. If you ask me if I'll miss anything from there, the simple truth is this. There are people there I guess I'd miss, but I just don't miss the place or the work or the bullshit. And since I believe Willy Wonka's, like most corporations in America today, are really just castles of shit built on bullshit, I don't really see what I'm missing out on, except for that day that's not too far off in the future. There's a day coming when all of Willy Wonka's employees, especially the Oompa Loompas, will feel a shudder through their spine. The time of the great apes who've been hiding away, I've spoken about this moment. There have been great cryptids and cryptozoological creatures been hiding in the corners of this world. They're just waiting because we're a bunch of fucks, and when they come out of the woods, you'll know what time it is. Yeah, anyways. I needed to do that other podcast to get that shit out of my system. I will miss some people there. I won't miss the job that was boiling me from the inside out and basically providing as much blood in my stool as possible on a daily basis. And the truth is, there is no grass is greener. I don't have a better job. This was literally a health decision. Like, literally, the other day, on my way to work, I felt like I was going to die. And I'm sorry, guys. I know that some of you go to work and you say, well, Dan, that's just the way it is. And if I had kids, if I had a woman that loved me, if I had any fucking reason to keep shoving rebar up my a-hole at that fucking place, who knows, maybe I'd still be there. Maybe it would buy me 2 more months. But the problem was, is I was having kind of a flashback. Now let me explain. Back in 2010, I got a job that I thought was going to be a good job. It was at Harborview Medical Center, working for the University of Washington as a report developer slash analyst slash research scientist for something called Microsoft Amalga. Now, of course, today it's not Microsoft Amalga. It's Caradime Amalga. I gotta pick the right organ for this. That's not it. Yeah, so back in 2010, I got a job working for the UW, a permanent position, really good money. I remember Jim, the hiring manager, telling me, you know, Dan, you'll never get rich in this job, but you'll never lose this job. You'll always have a job working for Washington State. And even though I wasn't an anarchist at the time, that was the least attractive, the least interesting thing, the thing that it actually sort of made me shudder. Like, believe it or not, some fuck telling me you'll always have job security made me worry. And for some of you Marxists out there, you probably don't fucking get it. But I really don't want a job where everyone's guaranteed a job. I would like a job. I would like to work someplace where my work means something, where it's about the work. It's not about unisex bathrooms. It's not about Willy Wonka propaganda about the summer of one. It's not about a worker caste system where there are blue badges and orange badges and ne'er the two shall meet. And yes, you'll see a connector bus with three people on it, but not one orange badge because that would be wrong. Yeah, delivering three fucks on an 80-person bus 30 miles makes more sense than letting orange badges get on the fucking connector. Although I think that's all melting down at Willy's right now. They've done a lot of weird transportation reorganization at Willy's in recent weeks. It's the kind of shit that you see, the chairs on the Titanic, the change orders for the Sixth Army at Stalingrad. Yeah. Microsoft Amalgo was a huge monkey fuck. It was a shitty piece of software developed mysteriously by some really wise ER doc in Washington, D.C., using, I think, Microsoft Access or something. It was one of the shittiest database systems, clinical data repositories. They kept changing what it was. Was it a warehouse? Was it a clinical data repository? Nobody fucking knew. But what I can tell you is this. The fucking monkey fucks of Microsoft convinced Harborview that the hospital record number was definitely no longer needed. You can throw away the hospital record number. We're giving you the Amalga ID. Yeah, but what they didn't say about the Amalga ID is that there was a guaranteed polynomial time cost in actually searching the data. So if it's 250 terabytes of data and you have a polynomial time cost baked into a query, yeah, it doesn't take much fucking napkin math to figure out that those queries take a fucking long-ass time to execute. And frankly, they're kind of non-deterministic. Which means I'm not even sure the real cost of the Amalga ID lookup was polynomial at the time. At the time, I theorized, and I put this on the frickin' wiki or whatever on SharePoint at the UW, at the time I theorized it could even be worse than that. It could be non-deterministic polynomial time, which means total fucking shit. Amalga was shit. Amalga was purchased using money from the 2009 Obama fucking Obama-rama stimulus fucking fund, stimulus bill, his economic stimulus package. It was part of what was called meaningful use. Now, as I've told you guys, everything is ironically named now. So if something is called meaningful use, it's probably the opposite. It's like you might as well call it garbage money. Here is some garbage money so that people can force Microsoft Amalga, a really shitty concept, really shitty piece of software, on a bunch of hospitals so we can go on the grift. And then we can fix it. We'll fix it. We'll fix it as it flies. Folks, I don't know if Amalga ever injured anyone, but I do know it was so shitty it ran the risk of doing so in one particular circumstance, and that's the infectious disease report. If your grandmother goes to the hospital for surgery, the one thing they don't want to do is put her into a room post-op where previously another person had had MRSA or some other hospital-acquired infection. Tens of thousands of people die every year going to hospitals, and they die because they acquire an infection there. So this is a big deal. So you say, what's the big deal about an infectious disease report? Well, it needs to come out early in the morning. It needs to come out on time. It needs to be accurate. Because if it's not timely, and if it's not accurate, and if it's not reliable, there's a chance that your grandma goes into a room where somebody had that flesh-eating shit. and your grandma never leaves the hospital. So do I know that Amalga ever injured anyone? No. Do I know that there were conversations at the UW in 2010 and 2011 about how shitty that system was and how someone could end up making a bad decision because of shitty data? Yes, those conversations occurred. So while working at Willy's, I got to get deeper into the fucking cloud. They'll tell you that the cloud is the future of computing. What they won't tell you is the people that live in the cloud, the people that built the cloud, have no fucking clue how it works. Or maybe they know, but you have to achieve some special level on Geek Radio or Geek TV, or be a Dungeon Master level 14, you fuck. Yeah, so these experiences with the cloud, especially the last week or two, brought back all those memories of that cronyism, that fuck-up-itude, that using of taxpayer dollars, which, you know, we all know taxation is theft, to basically put a chunk of software into hospitals that was total shit. But here's the cherry on the top. I believe it was in, I want to say it was in December or January, perhaps February, but it was probably January 2011. And I got an email from an old sergeant, an old professor of military science where I did ROTC. Now, folks, you all know I'm an anarchist now, but it's true. At one point in my life, I was a soldier. I was never in combat. I don't want to talk about it. Frankly, I was honorably discharged. I was probably a mediocre officer. That's the truth. I was a mediocre soldier and a mediocre officer. But Sergeant Rogers was neither of those. And he was a really good guy and a really smart guy. He was the guy that told me I would probably marry the first woman I fucked. Yeah, he was right about that. So, he emails me. This is 2011. This is February. And he says, Microsoft Amalga's team is coming to TRICARE and the military hospital system and telling us about how great Amalga is and how much of a success story it's been at the University of Washington. And if by success story, Sergeant Rogers meant shit story, if by success story he meant big crony clusterfuck, then he would be right. But if by success he means it actually improved the quality of data and the quality of research, I don't think that's actually true. And what I think is more important is that the University of Washington could have used its own resources to build something better. But here's what's worse. They were lying to Sergeant Rogers. They were lying to the United States military. They were lying to the soldiers that Willy Wonka's will sometimes pay lip service to about what Microsoft Amalga was and how much of a success it was. It was not a success, but they were, oh, it's been so successful. So I told Sergeant Rogers the truth. I said it was a piece of shit. I said if some idiot decided that a bunch of spreadsheets was the future of data warehousing and a really terrible integration engine called the Amalga pipeline, if someone said that the HL7 processor of Amalga might be the worst of all possible designs, that merely staring at it caused the fucking pipelines to crash. I mean, that sounds like an exaggeration, but it really, really isn't. And then there's this fun with the cloud, and I know for a fact that Willy Wonka's goes out there and tells people, oh, the cloud's awesome, and the cloud is safe, and the cloud is the future. And what I got to tell you, folks, is that if the people who built the cloud either don't understand it or keep deep secrets to themselves about how it works, if the people who built the cloud don't really trust it, if the people who built the cloud tell you that you can't expand a C drive because it might put your VM into an unstable state and you'll lose it forever. And for those of you who understand virtualization and how these things work in computing, you understand how fucking stupid that is. Basically, what they're saying is that if you build a VM in our cloud, it might one day get lost forever. Yeah. Lost forever. Because you want to expand the C drive. Now, folks, reducing the size of a drive is a matter of basic IT shit. it can be a big deal. But never in my life have I heard of the perils of expanding a drive space. No one gets scared about that. That is one of the least risky fucking things you ever do. And yet people at Willy's were scared about expanding a C drive. That something bad might happen. People at Willy's would tell me, yeah, the cloud should probably be able to do that, A, and B, we have no idea. And these were the cloud experts. These were the people on our team that were the cloud gurus. So all that cloud shit kind of brought up other shit. Now, folks, Willy's was boiling me alive. But this was just the kind of existential knife through the skull that simply pissed me off to no end. I can put up with a lot of shit, folks, but I don't like these kinds of thieves. Because thieves, like Willy Wonka's, never go to jail. They never do. I was in a meeting a few weeks ago where, and again, just to give you FYI, the part of Willy's I worked for dealt with security. So there was this hacker that they had, that they were successful in helping the feds, the crocodile, catch. And they were laughing with joy that this hacker would go to jail for 20 years because he or she thought that they had gotten away with it. Let me let you on a little secret, you fucks at Willy's. Willy's gets away with it every fucking day of the week. Willy's makes billions off of being a stealing, lying, conniving piece of shit. That's how Willy's makes money. Willy's makes money off of spying. Willy's makes money off of the crocodile. And you're gonna fucking talk about some douchebag trying to make $2 million? Your entire economic paradigm is based on theft, you fuck. That's what I felt like saying. What I said in the meeting was, well, he should have been a billionaire. Which was my sideways way of saying in Sideways Seattle that if he'd been a billionaire, he would have never been caught. He would have never gone to jail. And if he did go to jail, he would be conveniently killed. If you don't understand how the system works yet, folks, you really need to wake the fuck up. So yeah, I'm glad I got most of it out of my system. Clearly I did not. I needed to walk down that road a bit further, but I'm not going to miss the job. I'm going to miss some of the people, but the people there because they need to be. That's their place. It's not a place for me. And yeah, here's what I'll say about Willy's. I will say this. Being a contractor there is better than being homeless. That is the if you want to know the basic weighting factor, like how is it that at this moment I can just say fuck it? Because at this moment I bought myself some time, and I think I'll come up with a plan B this time. And if I don't, it'll be the next time. And if you say, well, Dan, if you treat Willy's like this, they'll never call you back. Folks, I went to the Seattle Times about Willy's in May of 2011 because of the Amalga experience. If they don't know who I am, they're even dumber than I mean, honestly, how the fuck do you let somebody into your security shop that basically went to a journalist believing journalism still existed, which it doesn't? How do you put someone in your security group who is an anarchist, who went to a journalist in 2011 and basically told that journalist that Amalga was a crock, that it was a big crony sham, and that if you were a journalist worth your salt, you would investigate? And oh, by the way, I also learned that the Seattle Times is bullshit too. Yeah. So if you want to know about Willy's and its genius, whatever, it's up to you. What I'm telling you right now is I do not regret that I needed the job to buy myself time. I don't regret the work I did there when I could work. When I was unable to work for them, when I was unable to work there, when my insides felt like they were melting out of me, then I told them I had a health issue and I disconnected. And arguably, I treated them with more respect than Willy's treats contractors and employees and lots of people every day of the week, including customers. I treated Willy's with more respect than when I was calling for help about Amalga. You see, this is what brings it back. I remember, you know, the University of Washington was a gold partner. The University of Washington was an Amalga gold partner. So I would have thought that would have meant the SLA, which means software license agreement, was quite good. And so on paper, it was. But in reality, the support you got for Amalga back in 2010 was akin to the determinism of most cryptos now for small purchases. It was, you know, maybe it showed up in a few days, maybe you got help. And it was pretty terrible. And the basic technical support for the cloud that I got in the last couple days that I was there, as long as I could stomach it, was pretty fucking terrible. And at every level. It wasn't just one level. It just wasn't one angle. It wasn't like Dan picked up the phone and spoke to the wrong person that day. I spoke to multiple people, multiple levels, in our group, outside our group, over the course of a couple weeks. And the support for the cloud internally is shit. I can't even imagine how much bullshit is involved externally. It must be a real monkey fuck. Anyways, I want to switch topics. Next topic. So, one of the things that really gets me sideways these days, and I think it's worth talking about, it's worth bringing up, is the kind of all-or-nothing thinking. And that's not accidental. That kind of thinking is on purpose. It's a way of diffusing power. It's a way of convincing people to do nothing. Like, if you can't get everyone to do something, it's not worth doing. What I can tell you right now, folks, if we base our politics, our community, our society on all or nothing, then we are doomed. We are doomed because we're either going to do nothing or we're going to end up murdering lots of people and do the wrong thing. What we ought to do is just try to convince enough people to change. Now, you could say, well, Dan, what if you convince enough people to do something terrible? Or the first rule in all things, and the first rule that is definitely not followed by the crocodile or any of the crocodile game theory analysts, is first do no harm. In fact, even the medical system no longer follows that principle. It's all game theory now. It's all weird, analytical, sideways thinking. Well, according to our models, it's true. If we put this much shit into the fucking water, it's going to kill this many people, but it might save this many. And folks, no one ever gets saved by the poison. It just kills people. All or everyone. Listen, if it's all or everyone, we're screwed. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this topic because I've spoken about it before. But if we want to change the world, it's not going to be about forcing everyone to think the same. In fact, it's got to be about the opposite. It's got to be about allowing people to come to a conclusion. It's got to be about leadership, not rulership. If you don't know the difference between a leader and a ruler, here's the difference. Leaders are able to convince people, to organize people voluntarily, because they influence them in a positive way. Rulers have to use threats and force and violence to control people. Be a leader. Don't be a ruler. Convince enough people to change. That should be your goal. Don't base your principles on everybody, because if you're doing that, you're going to be disappointed or you're going to end up a horrible dictator. Anyways, next topic, because I feel like I just didn't want to beat that one to death. This one's about my brothers and sisters. Now, some of you may know this. I have 13 nieces and nephews. I'm not going to rattle off their names, not the least of which, because I think that's fucked up. But I have 13 nieces and nephews, and they're all kind of in an age between, you know, the early childhood years up to people who are, you know, basically in college years, in their 20s. And I think they're all pretty amazing people. I can't say I have a great relationship with them all. And I will be honest, with respect to my sister's kids, I made decisions and behaved in ways in the past that probably estranged me from them. And I get it. I wasn't really a great friend to my sister's ex-husband, because I felt like, you know, I didn't like the way he treated her. But I also know he was a human being. And the sad truth is, a few years after my sister Nancy died, he died of cancer as well. And that is sad. But I have 13 nieces and nephews, and though I may not have a great relationship with them all, I think they're all pretty fucking amazing. Each and every one of them. Even the Danes. Maybe especially the Danes, because they survived the Danes. But anyways, I have 13 nieces and nephews. All of them are pretty cool. And here's what I would tell you, because I think a lot of people these days will say, well, I didn't do nothing. It's like this friend of mine who says, I didn't do nothing with my life, and yet he raised this awesome family. And yeah, maybe he never had the perfect career. Maybe he was never Prince of the Universe. I gotta say something, folks. Be careful of the things you regret not having been, because it's very possible they weren't worth being in the first place. Be careful of regretting that you weren't that really successful person. You have no idea what that person had to do to become successful. You might find that that path, that road is filled with a lot of pain too, and it's not the kind of pain that is easily gotten rid of, either existentially or spiritually. I will say this about my brothers and sisters. I think that they have raised amazing kids. I don't know if I would have ever been a good parent. And frankly, it is too late for me. But I do know this. My brothers and sisters are amazing parents, each and every one of them. And I don't always get along with them. I'm probably estranged from, at any given time, I'm estranged from one or two of them. But you know something? That doesn't take away from the essential truth. And here is the truth. And this is the thing. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, you know, if one of my siblings were to say, but I get scared, and what about this, and how will my kids do? And I say, listen to me. In my opinion, if any one of my nieces or nephews, no matter how young, and the youngest are still young, if they were left in the woods, if they had no one there for them, they were left in the woods by themselves, they wouldn't just thrive, they would flourish. All things being equal, my brothers and sisters have raised survivors. And this is an age of survival. This is an age that we're entering into that most Americans alive today have no understanding of. Like maybe your great-great-grandparent had an understanding of what I'm describing, but even they probably didn't completely understand. We are entering a kind of wilderness. And so what I would say to my brothers and sisters, not only have you done a great job, but try not to worry too much, because you've raised survivors. You've raised strong people. These are strong people. They won't just survive. They will flourish. That's how I feel about my nieces and nephews. And yeah, do they all do the stuff I'd want them to do? Dude, people, one of my favorite nephews is now getting ready to work on, you know, systems for the crocodile. And I get it. I know why he's doing it. And I respect his decision, though I disagree with it. But that doesn't mean he's not a survivor. He's just finding his way. And here's another path. And maybe the path is good, and maybe it's bad, but it's his path to learn. I don't know. This topic, I wanted to talk about it because I don't often say it enough that my brothers and sisters have been amazing parents. And even the few of us that haven't, meaning specifically I have another sibling that hasn't, unlike me, she's been a great aunt. And an amazing aunt, and been there for my nieces and nephews in Indianapolis in a way that I never was, never could be. Even though at times I could have been, I failed to be. Anywho, that's enough sappiness. I get sappy every once in a while. Oh, the next topic is titled, Everybody Wants to Ride the Crocodile. But I feel like I've already discussed that bullshit, and I don't want to discuss it again. The crocodile is a giant make-work project. Now, here's the thing, folks. I don't know how the first actual government was founded. I don't think having a community means government. You can have a community, you can have leadership, you can have mentorship, you can have facilitation, you can have organization and wisdom, and nowhere there do you need a fucking crocodile. You don't need a crocodile to solve problems, people. You really, really don't. So I don't know when the first crocodile came along. I know I've whimsically discussed it in the past in other podcasts. But what I will say is this. There are many ways of looking at government. One way of looking at government that I've talked about in the past is as a cargo cult, essentially a big cult, you know, and a cargo cult referring to cults that developed as a result of the presence of U.S. military and other militaries in the Pacific during World War II, they would show up in these islands that had never seen, you know, anything of Western civilization, never seen any technology. And they would show up there and all of a sudden, holy crap, there are airplanes and jeeps and all this food and all this stuff. And eventually there were these dudes that would predict when the next cargo ship would arrive, and they were the cargo prophets. And so there are a lot of cargo prophets in America today that work for the government directly or indirectly. It's like that Matthew Lesko. I don't know if he was an ordinary person who was deluded or if he was like a government kind of agent in some way. But he used to have that book back in the 80s or whatever, How You Can Get Free Stuff from the Government. You know, I don't know what to tell you, folks. It is a cargo cult, but I also say this. The government, in addition to being a cult, is also a big make-work project. There is nothing the government does that we can't do ourselves. We can police our own communities ourselves if we chose to do so. We can clean up our garbage. We can figure out how to get food, water, and shelter if we chose to do so. We can also make roads. We don't need the government for roads. We don't need them for hospitals. All of these institutions can exist without somebody pointing a gun at your head. It's entirely plausible. But when the government does it, it takes extra work. It's kind of like the stuff at Willy's. You know, I look around these corporations, and a lot of them feel like make-work projects now. It's like, holy shit, you could have half the people doing three times as much if you simply stopped doing stupid shit. But the reality is, it's almost like doing stupid shit is the point now. Do stupid shit, keep a lot of people working for as long as this fucked up sideways nightmare needs to continue. So yeah, to me, the crocodile, the government, seems like a big make-work project sometimes. That's all it is. Dig a hole, fill in a hole. Blow up a country, rebuild the country. Set something on fire, put the fire out. And there are a lot of people who believe this can work. Like, there, especially today with, like, Donald Trump and the whole let him, you know, devalue the dollar, let him print money, let him have some massive project. And I have no doubt that if something disastrous happens, a lot of Americans will get behind him and say, let him have it. Let him have the big project. We need the stimulus. Just like that 2009 Stimulus Act. 10 years later, we're going to need more stimulus, and it will be one shot of heroin after another, and it'll be one make-work project after another. It'll be one cadre of road workers standing around doing nothing after another, and nothing will improve. Anyways, I don't want to talk about that. I feel like I've beaten that as a dead horse, too. Let's go to the next topic. This one's a good one. There's a lot you can say about human beings and how we affect our environment. And I've heard some people in the past compare us to, like, beavers. Because, you know, the thing about beavers is they will go into an ecosystem, folks. Beavers will go into a system that is in one kind of state, and they'll do their thing, and they'll put it in a different state. It might be an ecosystem that just had a little creek and a little bit of grassland and a few trees. And by the time the beavers are done, you're going to have a wetland and a lake, and there's going to be fish there. And all of a sudden, that terrain is going to be different. And some of you might say, well, that's just natural. And I agree with you. Beavers are just doing what they're doing. And here's the important part. Yes, they're destroying, but they're also creating. And in a sense, it's almost a net-net, okay? That doesn't mean I think everybody should go around, you know, making beaver lakes. But beaver lakes are not the equivalent of us building dams. It really isn't. We don't do it the same way they do it. It isn't the same kind of approach. I think this is how I would frame it. The beaver, even though it's undermining the directionality of some ecosystem, isn't really just involved in pure destruction without any type of reason. And this is what brings me back to a quote from a co-worker, but really a fellow sailor on a ship. I was working on a ship in the Gulf of Alaska in 1993, and this officer aboard the ship told me something. We were talking about people getting into relationships on the ship. You know, it wasn't a huge ship, but there were enough people, enough men and women, that theoretically, you know, people could hook up. And he said, you know, I don't shit where I eat. And I thought at the time, yeah, that's not very profound, not necessarily original. That's a common quote you'll hear. You'll hear it. It's sort of a truism. Don't shit where you eat. Don't poop where you eat. And that makes sense. the way that human beings approach the ecosystem, the way we approach nature, we shit where we eat all the fucking time. And we don't get it. Like, we're convinced that we can keep shitting where we eat and somebody will come along and clean it up for us. In that sense, we're very much like a French bulldog. Beans will vomit and poop and eat his vomit and eat his poop and keep vomiting and pooping. And he just doesn't care. Now, he has improved a little in recent months, and partly I give credit to Dog Tanamo Bay. But the bottom line is this. We're like beans in the sense that we're convinced somebody will clean up the mess. But no one's going to. If you're a Christian, if you're a health and wealth Christian, which means you're kind of worshiping a false god, if you're one of these people who thinks God's going to clean up the shit you create by your Walmart SUV lifestyle, I'm sorry. The Lord in heaven's not going to do that. If you're a Christian who thinks he's going to clean up all the depleted uranium that's been sprayed and splayed all around into a fine dust, the Middle East and the Persian Gulf, if you think God's going to clean up the toxic mess left by our military around the world, you're a fucking crazy person. Okay, God doesn't do that. There are no more training wheels. This is the big game, folks. You want the world to be a better place? Jesus Christ gave you a way to do it. But there's going to be no special magic tricks to fix your shit. Don't shit where you eat. It seems simple, but it's not that simple because we've gotten so used to stacking people in cities, stacking people in places where there are too many people per square foot. It really is. In terms of density, there's just about no ecosystem that can handle 100,000 humans or 1 million humans. Eventually, we end up fucking up everything. And that was often the case before technology, or at least technology as we know it. It was often the case before the advanced technology of the last few hundred years. We would shit and eat and shit and eat until we destroyed an ecosystem, and then we would wonder why the gods failed us. Don't shit where you eat. The beaver goes into an area, and it turns that area into something else, but it doesn't really shit where it eats, okay? It's more like the Genesis device in Wrath of Khan, okay? That's what the beaver is. The beaver doesn't destroy life. It just replaces one life with another. And yeah, something gets destroyed, but it's a net-net. Humans, we just destroy, and all you're left with is zero. You think there's any life happening in and around Fukushima that we should be happy about? Do you think if two or three or all of the boiling water reactors cooked off on planet Earth, there would be much of an alternative ecosystem created? Do you think that there's an ecosystem of the nuclear wasteland? Because that's the thing, folks. Human beings shit where they eat. That's what we do all the fucking time. And I wish that could change. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how we change it. But I wish it could change. Anyways, that topic's over with. That's done. Oh, we're out of topics. This is good news. We're out of topics. It's almost as if, you know, everything's aligned, but we don't know. You're heading home from work today a little early, heading home from Willy Wonka's on the 520 bridge. You're heading across the bridge, and you're beginning to notice that all the traffic has come to a halt. Great tentacles are rising up from the waters of Lake Washington. All the gumbus is dripping off of their terrible spiky tentacle tips. A Tesla is being picked up by one of the tentacles about 300 meters ahead of you. You're beginning to panic because you realize something untoward is happening. The Tesla is picked up and shaken until the hipster douche inside turns into a bloody paste. And now the creature's revealed itself. It is a giant glumbus. It is of the dark hole. It is half French bulldog, half Humboldt squid, and the rest of the half is all just pain and anger. That's 150% of bullshit, people. And it's beginning to take the Volvos and all the little trucks and throwing them into the water. All of the sea creatures are joining in. It's becoming a bloodbath. And that giant French bulldog face looks at you. It looks right at you. It's staring at you with its French bulldog laser beam eyes. And you realize that your car is the next to be thrown into the water, and then you'll be devoured by all the gumbus freaks that now live in that toxic lake. And there you are, on the bridge, on the 520 bridge, making your way home as this mutant freak, 150% of pain, this tentacled French bulldog is tossing all of the weirdos and freakazoids and all the hipsters and all the scumbag trash toys and all the scrumbly folk and their Teslas and Volvos and BMWs into Lake Washington, and the dark waters are devouring them all as if all of life is in revolt. And at this moment, you ask yourself, why did I go to work today? And nothing will answer but the screeching and the screaming. Nothing will answer but a sky turned so ugly by poison that humans deserve the wrath of all the gods. That French bulldog mutant picks up your brand new Rolls-Royce Bentley. You've got keyless entry. But that animal does not care. It simply pulls you out of your vehicle and begins squeezing you till you pop. Yeah. So please drive safely. If you're leaving Willy Wonka's today or you're heading out on the road to see friends and family, please drive safely. There are Gumbus freaks and Scrontic lords. There are Gronkus kings and various tribesmen hiding in the mountainside. There are Bigfoot and other cryptoids and cryptids. There are giant fish and monsters and dragons just waiting until we finally fuck things up so badly that we're so weak, that we're so gulping for air, that they can simply come out of the woods and take over. And yeah, they won't be so happy about all the reactors cooking off. But they'll make us pay for that pain. Yeah. If you're making your way anywhere, keep in mind that the whole human race is not doomed. That not everybody you meet is an enemy. But not everyone you meet is a friend. If you're on these roads this evening, this afternoon, if you're heading out across this country, wherever you are, remember that there is a Lord in heaven that loves you, but that doesn't mean the Lord in heaven's going to fix your broken shit. When it comes to human bullshit, the problems we cause, Jesus Christ gave us the way. We just need to start following. And following does not mean you're a slave. Following does not mean you're a zombie. Following is a choice. And if you take your free will and you choose to do the right thing, even if it's just you, and even if it's just one thing, that's a beginning. And if we can get enough people, not to be perfect, not to be without sin, but if we can get enough people just to do a few a few more good things, to be a little less crappy, we could actually change the world. So good afternoon, good evening, and to all the creatures out there, beware of the Gronkus Lords, beware of the salt and pepper thieves, beware of Building 109, because some days the sandwiches taste good and some days they tear the insides out of me. Beware the meatloaf. Beware the various salad treats covered in composite. Don't eat the V8. It's free. It's free for a reason. Okay. And have a great fucking weekend. Especially you, Beans. Especially you. And Glimbus 12 can fuck himself.